Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I'm talking with Marta Hyatt, author of Remembrances of Time Past, a nostalgic collection of stories and photos recalling the way life used to be in the early part of the 20th century. So this fantastic little book is a sentimental journey back to the time of Model T Fords, stay-at-home moms, vinyl records, telegrams, radio days, and manual typewriters. It is truly a trip down memory lane for the older generation, and it offers surprising insights into the way life was for the youth of today. So a little about Marta. Marta Hyatt holds a doctorate in psychology and is a retired California State licensed marriage and family therapist. She is also the author of Mind Magic, Techniques for Transforming Your Life, which has been translated into 5 languages. Dr. Hyatt had a private psychotherapy practice in the San Francisco Bay Area for 25 years and taught self-development seminars to businessmen and women. Now living in Long Beach, California, she devotes herself to her first love, which is writing, and is currently working on her new book titled Inspirational Quotations, from the Concept Therapy Philosophy, due out this fall. So I'm very happy to have Marta Hyatt on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Marta.
Well, thanks, Juanita. It's great to be here.
It's so great to have you on the phone. You know, I had the opportunity to interview you a few months back online, so it's just so nice to actually talk with you in person today.
Yes.
Great. So, you know, your professional background is in psychology, and your first book was, you know, psychological based, and your third book, the one you're working on now, is in the realm of psychology. How did you come up with the idea for Remembrances of Times Past?
Well, it wasn't something I actually had in mind to do until one day my sister and I were doing the dishes together, and we started talking about how it was when we were little kids, when they didn't even have any kind of detergent. We used to get these little brown bars of soap, and we had to put them in a wire grate that fit around the bar. And then we had to just keep stirring it and swishing it around for 10 to 15 minutes until it produced enough suds that we could wash the dishes. You know, that would be pretty amazing to people today to have to go through that to just to get the dishes washed.
Right.
And then we also started talking about when we do the laundry with our mom, and we had to put it through the wringer because there weren't any automatic dryers then, and we put each piece through the wringer several times in order to get the water out, and what a chore that was. And then we had to hang it on the line outside to dry. And so after our talk about the way things used to be, I just got the idea that it might be interesting to put together an entire book about, you know, what we refer to as the good old days.
Well, what a great, great idea. So why don't you tell your listeners today what your book is about? You know, it does encompass the entire 20th century, I believe, but you do somewhat focus on certain decades. So can you just give them a little overview of what your book is about?
Well, it does focus on the first half of the century, and particularly the 40s and 50s, but this is not a boring history book. This is a fun and entertaining book for people, just to for people who lived it, to review the way it was back then, and for younger people, maybe some surprising insights for the way that their grandparents and even some of their parents lived. So it doesn't encompass every event, but only the ones that I acquired personal stories about.
How many stories are in this book?
Oh, gosh, I've never counted them.
There's a lot.
Yeah, I did count the photographs. There's about 250 photographs that accompany the story, so that really vividly brings it to life. And these were personal photos that people sent to me to go along with their stories.
How did you go about collecting all of these? How did you solicit people? Were they from friends?
That was where I started. Well, I started with relatives, actually. My uncles and aunts and every other relative I could get hold of, and I asked them to just tell me about their experiences when they were growing up. And sometimes I even question strangers, when I was taking a plane flight one time, I talked to the woman next to me about how things were for her. So, and as I mentioned in the book, I got a lot of stories from a magazine called Reminisce.
Mm-hmm.
But that's entirely written by subscribers. So I wrote to the contributors, and I asked them if I could use their stories and photos in my book, and they were always happy to do that.
That's great. You know, I have to tell you, when I first got a copy of your book, it was, you know, a few months back when you and I did our initial interview, and I was going out the door out of town, and my friend, which is also my neighbor, saw the book, and she grew up in that generation that you talk a lot about in it with the 40s and 50s. Well, she snatched up your book, and I just didn't have it for a month. She just thought it was the greatest book, and it really was a lot of fun for her. So I have to reiterate what you said about how it really is not like a history book. It really is a lot of fun. And, you know, you refer to the good old days, which is kind of, you know, what my friend also said, the good old days. What do you think, you know, comparing modern times now to those times that we refer to as the good old days, do you think that really it was more difficult then or less difficult or compared to now? What's your opinion?
Well, actually, I think both the last century and this century have their difficulties. It's just that the difficulties are of a very different type. But, you know, as you know, of course, today we're living in fear because of this war on terror,
mm-hmm.
And danger from radical extremists. But people had anxieties in the 20th century that were along the same lines because, as you recall, we had the Cold War for many decades,
mm-hmm.
and people were afraid that we were going to start a nuclear war with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I think probably one of the most fearful times in my memory was in 1962 when President Kennedy confronted Khrushchev over the missiles in Cuba that were aimed at the United States. And I remember watching the television and listening to that, and we really thought that it was going to be a nuclear war and it could be the end of the world. So that was very frightening.
Mm-hmm. So you would compare the fear level about the same?
At that particular time, it was.
Yes.
And, you know, we also had the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and I would say that was the 9/11 of the 20th century. And we had World War II during the 40s, but, of course, it didn't affect us as much here in the United States or North America, except that our boys, our sons and so forth, were sent overseas to fight that war. But I remember we had air raid warnings during that time when Europe was being bombed, and because we lived in fear that it would reach our shores.
Mm.
And besides war, one of the biggest fears we had back then was polio. And that was the plague of the 40s and 50s, and it crippled and even killed many children.
It's
So that was a horrible event. So I think one of the big differences is that we had far less crime in the first half of the 20th century.
Mm.
We didn't have gangs. We didn't have school killings. We didn't have school kids that had Uzis or AK-47s. I mean, that was just totally unknown.
Yes.
So I would say the tremendous increase in crime today is probably one of the most unpleasant changes for this century. But as you can see from that, every century has had its problems. They're just of a different kind.
Sure, sure. You know, so many things were invented and discovered in the 20th century that have been completely integrated in our society. What do you feel were the most significant?
Well, probably the most significant things were in the area of transportation and technology.
Mm-hmm.
First, there were the cars, which opened up the country to people, and then we had planes at the beginning of the last century, and of course that opened up the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
Then the latter half was characterized by computers and the internet,
mm-hmm.
which enabled instantaneous communication with the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say TV would be in there too. because we get our news of what's going on in the whole world every morning and evening. And when I was a kid, we had to go to the local theater to see the week's news, and it was what happened the week before.
Yeah.
And we'd see it on the screen.
Right.
And now, you know, no sooner does it happen than we're seeing it.
It's
on
instant.
Our TV.
Yeah. How is that for you to see the changes? I mean, that is incredible. And could you even imagine at that time that you were seeing the news, you know, a week after it happened in a theater? Would you even have been able to wrap your thoughts around the concept of what we have now?
No.
Isn't that incredible?
No. Well, I certainly couldn't. But, you know, I think for me personally, one of the greatest things and the most amazing thing is the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And sending email. I moved from Northern California to Southern California, and of course I had to leave a lot of friends behind, but because of email, I contact them practically daily.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's so astonishing. As well as looking things up. In the past, you remember we used to have to go to the library, and we'd go through the card file.
Yeah.
And try to find, you know, the thing we were looking for. And that was particularly true when I was writing a book like this.
Mm-hmm.
And there were certain historical dates, you know, that I couldn't recall. And instead of having to traipse down to the library, I just typed it into the Internet and Google it, and there it was. So that's quite mind-boggling for me.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people of my generation.
Yeah, it is very incredible. Now, how about the whole healthcare industry and the medical possibilities that we have now that, you know, we didn't in the first part of the century? What are your opinions on the progressive change in the healthcare system?
You know, that's another area that really has changed enormously, but it has both good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
If you've seen that latest movie, everybody's talking about the Sicko by Michael Moore.
Right.
We can see that there's tremendous problems in the healthcare industry today, not only with people who are already insured, but those who aren't.
Mm, mass population that isn't insured.
Yes, mm. Exactly. Of course, back in the beginning of the 20th century, nobody was insured. There was no such thing as insurance then.
When did insurance come around?
You know, I'm not really certain of,
okay,
of when that happened, but I'm sure that it was a very gradual type of thing, and
sure,
you know, not just instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
But probably in the 60s.
Yeah,
but I could
imagine.
Be wrong about that.
Mm-hmm.
But because we didn't have insurance in the early part of the century, and most people lived on farms back then, farm folk developed a lot of natural remedies to treat illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Like hydrogen peroxide, that was a favorite for infections. And my mother made homemade chicken soup and the old mustard plasters that we used for colds.
Sure.
So there was quite a variety of things like that people self-treated
mm-hmm.
with.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in those days, people didn't live very long either.
Yeah.
They were lucky to make it to their 60th birthday.
Wow.
And I think one of the reasons for the early deaths back then was poor sanitation.
Oh.
Even the germ theory wasn't really that prevalent at the beginning of the century. And most children were born at home, assisted by a midwife. So some women, in fact, a lot of women died in childbirth.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then when country doctors appeared, if you couldn't pay to go to the doctor or even to a hospital, you either found a way to treat yourself, but some people who lived in the country would barter with the doctor, bring him a chicken or some homegrown fresh vegetables
mm-hmm.
and in order to get treated. And then I think it was around the late 30s that doctors began making house calls,
mm-hmm.
and that was certainly convenient. But, of course, you know, today with all of this traffic that we have,
right,
that would be an impractical way to see patients.
I wonder if some remote rural areas still have country doctors that follow those sort of old school principles. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think they do, but I never did get any personal stories from people about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably still there.
I imagine somewhere far out there. You know, talking about rural life also, There just seems to be, you know, the population is higher than it was back in the earlier parts of the 20th century, and there seems to be an influx of people moving into the cities and just abandoning the rural life, you know, small farmers. We don't see nearly the amount of small farmers that we did at one time. What are your thoughts on the changes when it comes to cities, towns, rural life?
Yeah. Well, you know, once again, there's a mix of good and bad here, because living on the farm, as the majority of people did in the early part of the 20th century, most people were poor, and they didn't have, of course, any of the comforts that we have now. So people grew their own vegetables, they had fruit trees, and they usually had chickens or cows or pigs for their meat and their eggs and their milk. So they were self-sustaining, and the vegetables were grown without any pesticides, in good soil that wasn't stripped of nutrients like we have today. But, of course, the disadvantages were we didn't have any indoor plumbing, and that was no fun in the middle of the night if we had to go out to an outhouse.
Or the middle of the winter.
And the middle of the winter, right. Yeah. And I was actually born in Toronto. So I know what that's like.
No kidding.
And, of course, we didn't have any electricity for quite some time, and that meant you had to wash your clothes by hand and hang them out to dry. And I remember we got a Saturday night bath in a big tin tub that my mom would fill with water that she boiled on the wood stove.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we didn't have any such thing as showers. And you sure didn't want to be the last kid in that tub.
Oh, boy. No kidding.
No.
That so, is so funny.
The good things, I think, were that there was lots of land. There was no smog. There was fresh air and sunshine. There was no overcrowding. And there were no traffic jams.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, very few people had a car. So, and telephones, only about 8% of people had telephones at the beginning of the century. And even at that, they were what was called party lines, where your neighbors or your relatives could be on the line with you, and they could listen in if they had a mind to.
Yeah.
So things weren't private back then.
No. You know, a lot of people think that it was a much simpler life back then, but, you know, there was different things that people had to think about, worry about. How would you compare maybe the stress levels of people in general from that time to now?
I think the stress is higher today.
Mm-hmm.
The stress back in the early part of the century was probably more physical hardships. Everybody had to work hard, including the children, and the kids didn't complain about the fact that they had to go out and help pick the vegetables and feed the chickens and other jobs that had to be done on the farm. Part of their stress came also from being poor and not being able to afford many of the things that people would want today. But today, people have traffic, I would say, is the number one stressor for people, working people.
Mm.
And, you know, sometimes they can spend 2 or 3 hours sitting in their cars, and then they get someplace and there's no place to park.
Mm-hmm.
There's that, and then we suffer from two types of pollution, one being the decrease in our air quality, the smog, and the constant noise that we're exposed to today, planes and helicopters and what are those blow things, you know, that the gardeners use.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and there's just tremendous noise around that stresses people out.
Yeah.
And then everyday things like phone trees.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to call an insurance company this week, and my God, I must have been on the phone half an hour just trying to get through to a person.
Yeah.
You know, it's very stressful for people.
Yes, it is.
And, of course, now we have these people yakking on cell phones everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah, you can't even eat in a restaurant anymore without having to listen to someone's call.
Yes.
So this creates a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were talking before about having the news on television every night, and that's the plus of knowing what's going on right away, but the minus is that we're exposed to all of these wars, these murders, and, you know, the increase in crime.
Mm-hmm.
When in the past we went from not locking our doors into now we have to have deadbolts and burglar alarms.
Boy, isn't that true.
So that's another stressor, the increase in crime.
Right.
I think. So we can see both centuries have their problems.
Yes, absolutely. So a big issue of the day these days also is immigration. What happened through the 20th century regarding immigration and multiculturalism? Like, how have you seen, with the research that you did, the progression of immigration?
Well, of course, we had that huge influx of immigration back in the early 20s, mostly from at Ellis Island in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those people were escaping wars. So we didn't have something, or it could have been very minimal if we did, called illegal immigration, because these people were all processed legally when they came in.
Right.
And I think the big difference between immigrants today and our forefathers and mothers is that in the past they were anxious to learn English and integrate as soon as possible.
Mm.
My grandparents came from Italy, and they just did everything that they could to learn English, and they just wanted to be a part of society, and they knew that they couldn't succeed unless they could speak the language.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they were often segregated into little cultural enclaves, you know, such as the Italians had their group, and the Irish and the Poles and so forth, that's a lot like Hispanics today in certain areas of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the big difference is the push to learn English and integrate into the larger society is no longer the case, because now there are newspapers and magazines and television in different languages. And even in certain department stores now, we go in and they have signs in both languages. So there isn't as much pressure to integrate.
Okay.
However, the second generation immigrants seem to be more impelled to learn English and become integrated in the larger society. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out by the next generation.
Absolutely. That's a very interesting point, too, about the second generation, because I've witnessed that as well, and I think that, you know, you're spot on with that observation. So what do you think were some of the defining cultural changes that happened in the 20th century? You know, we just talked about immigration. Were there any other sweeping cultural changes that you'd like to mention?
Well, I think the biggest cultural change was the status of women. Women were allowed by men to vote in 1920, but they didn't make much progress after that, and they were still considered subservient to men. But after the feminist revival in the 70s, that was triggered by Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, women started to gain a lot of freedom and gradually have achieved equality with men, but there's still quite a ways to go. But now we're even talking about the possibility of a woman president. So, you know,
isn't that something?
Yeah, it's really quite amazing. We've come a long way, baby, huh?
Yeah. No,
and I think the pill, that was introduced in 1960, the birth control pill,
mm-hmm.
and that gave women sexual freedom and control over the number of children they wanted to have. So that made a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And another major cultural change we had was the so-called hippie revolution of the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Where we went from being a very uptight society, governed mostly by religion and the rules of etiquette, to anything goes now and do your own thing. So that generation changed our entire culture. We went from wearing strap-on corsets to wonder bras,
yes.
And from bathing suits that covered a woman's entire torso to bikinis.
Right.
Well, a lot of people thought that was the end of civilization as we knew it when bikinis came out. And the same thing with men. They went from button-down white shirts and suits and ties at work to casual Fridays, and sometimes anything goes.
That's true. The working conditions in the country completely changed around that time as well.
Yeah, they certainly did. And when I think back to when I worked as a secretary, and that was back in the 50s, I had to come in the morning and dust the boss's desk every morning, sharpen his pencils, get his morning coffee, and I even had to run errands for him if he needed something for his wife's birthday.
Wow.
Yeah, and in those days, women could not get promoted to management. That simply wasn't allowed. And also, employment ads in the newspaper were divided into jobs for women and jobs for men.
Is that right?
Yes, and never the two shall cross.
Oh, gosh, that's interesting.
Yes, a woman could not apply for a job that was listed as a job for a man.
Wow.
And, of course, the male jobs were all the management jobs.
Yes.
and even salesmen. Women could not be saleswomen in those days, unless it was some product for the household.
Uh-huh.
You know, like a vacuum cleaner, something like that. But usually that was men too.
Yeah.
So, but I think women got a little revenge when computers came out because men had to learn to type.
Yeah. Oh.
And now most of them don't have a secretary anymore. You know, except the top level.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Do it
so,
themselves.
So after the feminist movement in the 70s, women in the office were no longer treated as maids, you know, running out to get coffee for their bosses and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another big area of change has been in clothing. I talk about that in my chapter about fashion. Corporations like IBM, for instance, were known in the past for that button-down shirt look, and women were not allowed to wear pants. That was verboten. And
wow.
They usually had to strut around the office wearing those damnable high heels.
Oh, boy.
But by the 70s, things loosened up. And I remember when it came out that IBM had declared that men could now wear pink shirts to work. Well, that actually got in the newspaper.
Is that right?
Yeah. And women could wear pants as long as it was a matching pantsuit. Now we seem to have gone 180 degrees in the other direction, and grunge seems to be in.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, unless you work in a place like fast food or Disneyland where they have where they wear uniforms.
Uniform, sure.
Otherwise, you wear whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real statement on
yeah.
what you wear these days, most definitely. How interesting. So, Marta, with your long history in psychology and studying people and behaviors, what have you seen change in people's mindsets, their values, and, you know, where they place importance in their lives? How have you seen that change through the years?
Well, actually, I think that there has been a decline in values in the sense that perhaps the word I should use is civility, that there's been a big decline in people being civil compared to how we were in the past. Where people, politeness was everything. A man would tip his hat to you when you were walking down the street to a woman, pull out the chair for you in the restaurant and so forth. But besides minor things like that, people were just courteous. They didn't interrupt you when you were talking, and they certainly didn't use the cuss words that we use today, which have become so common. At every level of society, it seems. So that's something that I find bothersome. I mean, there seems to be a rise in values in one sense, in that there's, I guess I might call it more religiosity now, or at least profess to be more religious, and whether that matches people's actual everyday values is sometimes debatable, as we hear from time to time. About people, you know, expressing one thing in their religious values and then behaving in a very different way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I see as the biggest problem, and I don't think it's good for our society that we have become so aggressive, so confrontative with other people, and that may be a product of the stress, of the overcrowding, of the problems with the traffic and so forth. Even the cell phone things that we referred to, you know, the rudeness of some people pulling out their cell phone in a restaurant when you're trying to have a quiet dinner, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good example of the lack of civility anymore.
And there seems to be almost a self-centeredness,
yes,
that may not have been quite apparent, you know, years and years ago.
Yes, I very much agree with that. I think that's a good way to put it.
Mm.
It's become a very narcissistic society. a very me first kind of society and just get out of my way.
I don't think that will last long. You know, that's the path of that is, I don't think leads anywhere good. So I would imagine at some point it would have to turn around, and, you know, that would maybe be one of the biggest areas in the upcoming 21st century that may have to change. And what other areas do you think is seeing the areas that we'll see the biggest changes in the future?
You know, it's just really hard to predict that.
Yeah.
Because what has happened in the 20th century, particularly the latter part of it, was just so amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, these were the greatest changes that have happened in all of history. So people who lived in that century have seen changes that have never ever occurred before throughout all of history. So, you know, to envision that there's going to be even more is really hard to grasp. But my guess would be it's going to be outer space, that we're going to go to the moon. We may even discover life on other planets. That's a possibility, too.
Well, you never know.
Yeah, and we may be living, some of us, on other planets.
Yes.
That may happen.
Yeah, it sounds kind of far-fetched, but, you know, a lot of the things that are living, that are a part of our world today, were far-fetched, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, so you just never know.
Right. Couldn't even be imagined.
Yes.
My neighbor was telling me yesterday that she's going to get fiber optics, you know, for her internet connection, and I already have broadband, of course. And I said, my gosh, how much faster can we go?
Right.
I mean, it's practically instantaneous now.
No kidding.
So it's really going to stretch our minds to see what's to come.
Right.
And I think it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Marta, what was the most enjoyable part of writing Remembrances of Times Past?
Oh, I think it was getting the stories from other people.
Mm.
Some which would spark my memory, and that I'd long forgotten, and others that I didn't even know about. Like I was mentioning about on the plane, I sat beside this elderly woman, and so when it came time for our lunch, we started to chat, and I told her what I was doing, and she told me that she went to school right here in California in a place called Gilroy, where the teacher would come to school on a horse.
Oh.
And the teacher had to be there a half hour before the students because she had to stoke up this wooden heater that they had.
Oh, gosh.
And, yeah, and she had to clean the blackboards and get everything ready before the students came to school. So that was really interesting, and that's the kind of thing that made this book really exciting for me, was hearing these stories from other people and the recollections of my own experiences.
Mm-hmm. How fascinating. How much fun must have been doing this book. So what is your website that listeners can go to order your book and to find out more information about you?
Well, this was published by Northern Star Press. So it's just northernstarpress.com.
Okay.
And that features both of my books, the other one you mentioned, The Mind Magic,
mm-hmm.
or Amazon or any of the online booksellers or bookstores.
Oh, great, great. They can order it directly through bookstores if
yes.
Like also. Well, that's wonderful. Well, our time is somewhat coming to an end here, and I just want to offer you the last minute or so to share any final thoughts you'd like to with your listeners today.
Well, I think what I might say is that people refer to the past as good old days. And in certain ways, you know, when we look back on them, we feel kind of nostalgic about it, you know, especially if we're sitting in traffic, for example, and think how it wouldn't that have been wonderful to be out there on the farm going to a show on a Saturday night in the old buggy.
Mm-hmm.
But they need to remember that the good old days had their hardships, too, and plenty of them, which, as I said, were more along the physical line, the hard life that they had to live. So every age has its hardships. They're just of a different kind.
Mm-hmm. Those are great final thoughts. Thanks so much for talking with us today, Marta. It has been a real pleasure.
Well, for me too. That was very enjoyable.
Oh, great. Much success to you. Your book, Remembrances of Times Past, is just fantastic, and I highly recommend listeners look for it over the Internet, through your website, however. Thanks so much, Marta.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this interview today. I sure have. It was just a pleasure talking to Marta, and as I told you earlier, I do have her book, and it just is such a fun read. Please do check it out. You can also go online to readerviews.com for a recent book review and online interview. And once again, Marta's website, her publisher's website to order the book, northernstarpress.com. Thanks so much for listening to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. Until next time.